Hare Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sah Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay. Okay, page 20. Theoretically, the yoga system is based on the same tenets as Shankya philosophy, and it also incorporates some of the teachings of Vedanta. In Shankya philosophy, the mental body is defined in terms of three functions or parts: mind, intelligence, and false ego. But in Vedanta philosophy, the mental is divided into four parts: mind, intelligence, false ego, and chitta, or conditioned consciousness, the storehouse of memories. Right? Because, see, is that in all these systems, it's not just in the yoga system it only defines it up to this point. It's all these systems only define up to this point. Right? So when we say Vedanta, we also technically mean, the Vaishnav Vedanta. Now, you have is from some will accept the chitta meaning the consciousness, and that so they're trying to clear that consciousness so that there's no previous samskaras of impressions from the past. And so by not having that, then one becomes situated in a state of being freed from material association. But they're not taking to the point that actually Vyasadeva does, where the chitta meaning that the consciousness is polluted, but you bring it means I am the controller and enjoyer. You're trying to bring it to the consciousness is purified, that I am servant of God. So that none of the systems do. Right? So that's one of the main points that makes all of them bogus, even though they're Vedic. Right? And elements of them are correct. But just Prabhupada points out is that if you have a mathematical calculation, if your first part of the equation is wrong, even though you do everything else correct, it's still wrong. So that's what happens with these, is because they're not taking themselves as servant of the Lord. Therefore, then the whole system actually comes out wrong. Right? You know, Nyaya, the system of logic, is first class. Everybody uses it. But the problem is since they're not servant to the Lord, they're not using this process of logic in the service of the Lord. They're simply using it to try to disconnect themselves from the material world. Does that make sense? Yes.
So what's their idea of chitta?
I think they'll disconnect that all with the mind and the memory and the intelligence. I think they don't take it beyond that, right? Because memory is in the intelligence, and the mind is always taking advantage of that. That's one of the points where the mind and the intelligence overlap, is that the mind, Bhaktivinoda Thakura explains, the process is the senses are pulling in information. So that's the first step that the mind does. The second step is the mind reduces it down to one thing. Then the third step is that it then accesses the memory that's in the part of the intelligence to analyze that one, you know, sense point of sense information. Then four, then it accepts or rejects that. You know, what to do with that. In other words, it analyzes what to do with that information now. And then the fifth is that it then engages the senses. Does that make sense? So, like, let's say you touch, it means you're in the kitchen, there's so many things happening, people are talking, there's things on the stove, you know, there's something going on out the window, the neighbors are banging on something, but your finger is touching the pot and it's hot. So the mind, there's all that information, will reduce it down to that one sensation. You know, that's the second step. The third step, it'll go from the memory. So from the memory, it was last time that happened, it didn't work out so good. So then the fourth thing is then the mind accepts makes the decision to move the finger, right? And then the fifth is that then the mind engages the sense, you know, the arm to move. Does that make sense? That's how it functions. So they're just taking the memory, you know, he sees the storehouse of memories to be there. But then the difficulty with that, even though that's nice, and it's basically, you could say, within the material world, it functions well. Because then when you move on to another body, then basically you don't remember the elements from before, though there is the element of that samskara, of that impression. So that's why some people have a phobia of something. It's not that it itself is specifically scary, but they become overly disturbed by it because there's something from previous lifetimes that has make it, scary. Does that make sense? You know, you're a fly, and you're caught in a web, then a spider is scary, like that. So somehow now that impression is left, then you see a spider, even though now instead of the spider being, 10 times, 100 times bigger than you, now you're thousands of times bigger than it, but you're still scared, because the impression is left, So
does that mean women remember better?
Maybe they're just more in tune with their inner some scars or something.
Can we say that
cheetah? No, it's just like for them it's the spider, and for the man it will be when the what do you call it, the repo guy shows up. Yes.
Can we say that cheetah can be material and spiritual sometimes?
In this case we're taking the chitta meaning the polluted consciousness, so it's just defined. Now you do have the element that the chitta is purified when we see ourselves as servant of Krishna. Then we give up that I'm the controller and enjoyer. Then that's the actual proper conscious. Then you're dealing with actual mind, actual intelligence, actual ego.
But the term would be used the same.
Basically means that the term, I think, is also has a few applications. Because chitta meaning the polluted consciousness, because there's a name for that. You also have the karana sharir. Like that. But the chitta is, that's like where the soul is situated. It's in the heart. So when you say the heart of the living entity, we mean the chitta. Because that's where he's situated. Right? So in there, then there's the life airs, the soul's there, Paramatma's there. Like that. It's nothing to do with the heart muscle. Because the heart muscle is close to the chitta. Then when the blood goes through, it picks up consciousness from the living entity. Right, and that's what's then goes throughout the body. That's why where the blood is, that's where you're conscious. No blood, you're not conscious. Does that make sense? So it will seems to have also different applications. I would use, but here, what he's trying to do is bring out that if you don't deal with polluted consciousness, then you can bring yourself to the liberated platform. See why this is important. Is what they don't calculate, these other systems, is you get to the liberated platform. And you can do that through these different systems. So basically, if you give up material engagement, at some point the reactions to whatever you're doing has to stop. Right? So at some point you would get liberated. Right? But to do that simply through logic or these other elements is extremely difficult. Like we see the yoga system may take them 36,000 years is pretty standard. 60,000, okay, they take a little longer. But like the Pachetas did it in 10,000. So, that was pretty quick. But maybe the 10 of them together, I don't know. Yeah, yeah, so then they inspired each other. Like that. So the 10 of them, so it's a long time, very slow process. Now, what they don't calculate is they'll get to the liberated platform, and it's just the soul. So you don't have the material mind, intelligence, the false ego, you don't have the body, you don't have the senses, you just have the soul in its pure state. And that, Nyaya Vaisheshika Shankya, then basically you'll be in an unconscious state. I'm not exactly sure. Yoga, you're conscious, you're also unconscious, basically. All of them, you're pretty much unconscious. So I guess these must be people who are, sleep deprived or, emotionally stressed, that, being in an unconscious state would sound good, right? So, but when they get to that state, there is no material mind and intelligence, so there is no, that material memories aren't there. But the soul, when it wants to become active, remembers the material world. So in other words, it remembers the principle of enjoying in the material world, material activity. It's not that it identifies with a specific one. Like now we'll identify with this particular set of some memories that are going on now. But there you're talking about, you're identifying with the concept of being the controller and the enjoyer. And the material world affords ways of doing that. So then the soul falls back into the material world. So that's the one thing that they don't calculate, none of the six systems. So because of that, then they all are temporarily placed. That's why we don't actually say that they're not nitya. Even though they get to the liberated platform and they're spiritual, or transcendentalists, but they're not actually eternal like that. So we don't count them as, it's still naimittic. It may just be, your highest forms of naimittic, but it's still, just like the Brahman is the highest form of naimittic within the human society, right? But then within that, there's the karmi, higher than that's the jnani, right? So someone who's liberated is higher than that. But because of the citta is why they come back. So that's the important reason why Vedanta brings that out, and the others, they don't understand that, because to understand that means then the soul doesn't belong there, and that means activity is actually the essential point of the soul, right? Because when someone's conscious, they're active. So consciousness means activity. They're taking it that, yes, activity is there because we're conscious in the material world. We get rid of the material consciousness, we get rid of the material activity. Or you do it mechanically the other way. You get rid of the material activity, you get rid of the material consciousness, therefore it all, the lights go out or the light turns on, one of them. And so then you're just left with that, empty state. Right? But then what they don't calculate is the polluted consciousness. So when we talk about false ego, because they've only defined three. False ego, coming from goodness, passion, and ignorance. But they haven't defined false ego coming from polluted consciousness. Because that's beyond the material world. You had that before coming here. It wasn't created by the material energy. That's where all these other philosophies have made a mistake. They think the material energy has created. So consciousness is created by material energy. No, the soul itself is conscious. But the soul is unfortunately hasn't been conscious in an appropriate way of God. Therefore, then the consciousness is polluted. So the trick is, instead of trying to do all that mechanics, you simply change the consciousness that I'm not the controller and enjoyer. And that means all the other elements are purified. Right? So then the use of the ego, the use of the mind, the use of the intelligence is purified, and those are the cause of the gross manifestations. Right? So that's the whole point, is that each what was it before, is that whatever the cause, means whatever's the effect, always carries the nature of the cause. Right? So it's a grosser manifestation, or more visible manifestation of the cause. So the body, the activities of the body, are the gross manifestations of the false ego, right? It means the endeavors of the senses are the manifestation of the intelligence. Does that make sense? You know, the emotions, and other, these are the manifestation of the mind. So that's where you see the growth. So, because if the pollute consciousness is impure, that means the subtle body will be impure, means the gross body and the manifestations will be impure. Mm-hmm. So you change the consciousness, then you change, that means then the subtle body will be pure and the gross body will be pure. So that's how that you see great personalities can have a material body but function on the pure spiritual platform. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right? Because as each is transformed, because the consciousness is pure, then when it its manifestation will also have that purity. Yes.
Is that why? Because very elevated people, their stool doesn't smell. They don't have smell.
That you can, if you want to go to that degree. But I mean, if you want, just try, you know, during the summer, just living off of, you know, blueberries or whatever's happening, and don't eat anything else, and your stool will probably be pretty good also. Yeah, but it's not taken as a major symptom. Yeah, that's not the major symptom. Does that make sense? Yeah, because you know, so many factors, anyone can get a, you know, bad stomach, and then, you know, that doesn't mean they fall from their elevated position.
So we can say the other systems, they get rid of the upadis, but not the ahankar.
Yeah, or they may even get rid of the ahankar of today. Mm. You know what I mean? In other words, the ahankar of this particular body, but they haven't gotten rid of the ahankar that's created this body.
Yes.
Right? If I'm the controller and enjoyer, then I have to have a material body to manifest that through. Right, so as when we're defining an anartas, so Hridaydarbalya is it has two levels: the polluted consciousness, where it's just the tendency towards enjoyment, and then there's the secondary, which is the specific enjoyment. Does that make sense? So in this lifetime you have specific enjoyments, but last lifetime you had different enjoyments. You know, and so every lifetime, every individual has a different set of enjoyments. But the common ground is everybody wants to control, everybody wants to enjoy.
And the upadis are then even more specific?
The upadis means that you say, I'm this particular body, and it has these particular qualities, and social status, and whatever it is, you may connect with it. But it's still based on the original. So that chitta, when that's purified, then everything else becomes purified. But when the chitta remains in the state of a polluted consciousness, but why it's important is just it's not your conditioned consciousness, it's the storehouse of the memories. Right? Because then that is where you remember about the material energy. That's why you can if you use the philosophy and think about something properly, you're actually using the spiritual intelligence. But the problem is because of the chitta, the polluted consciousness, then there's the idea, no, but I can enjoy from this. The spiritual intelligence is saying you can't. But the others say, no, but they see there's so many examples or this or that, and you say, but it didn't work. No, but if I just done this, then it would have worked. That's the mental speculation. Right? That's where the mind adds to this mix. Is that the mind comes up with different ways that, well, if I had just made this slight adjustment, then I would have enjoyed. Does that make sense? You know, so it always comes up with something. You do that one thing, and then he still has a problem.
So it must be something else.
Yeah, so you just keep looking for some adjustments until it's not you anymore, then it's somebody else, so then it's the world, it's the universe. You know, it's all got to change, you know, so... It just goes on like that. And then you're trying to... that's the meaning of mental speculation. Is that you're always speculating how to... what adjustment you could make. Hello?
Humsi.
Humsi, okay. We are here, and we're hungry. Yes.
When we're discussing about the chapter 6 of Gita, we talk of the two last stages which can be spiritual, dhyana and samadhi. The last two yoga moksha stages.
Well, they're considered the advanced stages. You know, so you can say it's spiritual, but it's not necessarily that it's devotional. Mm-hmm. So the ones previous to that would not be considered, you know, spiritual platform, because you haven't added the super soul. But even up to dharana, you're just focusing, but you're not focusing on anything. You're just trying to get your focus so it's on one point. Then once it's on one point, then you put the super soul there. So that starts dhyana. So dhyana and samadhi are considered the advanced stages. So before that would be preliminary. But the point is spiritual means what we're discussing, because that's what we're doing, is discriminating between what's spiritual and what's devotional. So that's what these other systems don't do. They can tell, for them, because spiritual is the end of the line. But the point is you can still be on the spiritual platform with the idea I'm the controller and enjoyer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You understand?
So my question,
because that's the tattvasta position, is you have the choice. So now we're in the negative aspect of the choice. So you have to bring that to the positive. Then you can move to the devotional. Does that make sense? So if you don't purify the consciousness, you mean in getting rid of I'm the controller and the joy, the Purusha Bhav, then you can get to the spiritual platform and become liberated. But you can't get to the devotional platform. So that's why the devotional platform, because it's beyond, includes the spiritual. So if the devotee, he's engaged in the yoga process, then all eight elements are devotional. You know, so they automatically have the aspect of the transcendental. But for the yogi, because the mechanics of it, only the last two actually become spiritual. And then only when he reaches samadhi, he may transform that into transcendental or leave it at spiritual. Right?
So my mind does that exactly that. It's because of the citta element that the yogi can either identify with the impersonal Brahman, or if he gets rid of that, he can then identify with Bhagavan.
Yes. That would be the point. So we discuss the yogis who have done that, or point out yogis who haven't. You know, like, what's it? Vishramitra, right? He's a yogi. You know, he lives on Brahma's planet. He can move around the universe as he pleases. Well, you know, sometimes he has some inspiration to move around the universe like that, you know, when Sudarshan is chasing him. But the point is, he can go anywhere in the universe, and he can go to Brahmaloka and live there. Right? But still, until that devotional element is there, then he's not counted as a devotee. Right? So he's counted as a great transcendentalist. And we can see from this pastime, he appreciates devotional service and sees his higher position. But whether he's actually taken up that service or that consciousness of service, that hasn't been defined. But they can see it. You know, just like the Nyaya and Vaisheshika, they can see that the position and supremacy of the Lord, but it's just not of interest. You know, so they can admit he's greater than us, he's superior to us, and so all this, they appreciate all that, right? He's the controller of everything, creator, maintainer, destroyer. They appreciate all that, but the idea to actually take up service doesn't even come up as an idea. It's not even something they think about and reject. It's just they don't think about it. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like the little kid's walking along and sees a mud puddle and he goes over and gets a stick and starts playing in it. You know, the adults are walking by. It doesn't cross their mind to do that. They're not thinking, well, check it out. You know, oh, I'm an adult. I shouldn't do that anymore. You know, it just doesn't even cross their mind. You know, so it's just... They don't think about it, you know, unfortunately. It's because the citta is they don't address it. It's not in their philosophy. So that's why then here it's been pointed out that here the yoga system, even though we're now on the fourth level of the six, right? So it's taking the Shankhya to another level, including the mind and the, you know, and all those elements, the more human element. Right, instead of just purely intellectual, still it doesn't consider the citta. Yeah. In yoga, however, the mental body is equated with the mind. And the intelligence, the false ego, considered to be aspects of that mind. Right? Prabhupada also gives that one. That's general, because when you're talking on the material thing, then it is. It's actually the mind. You always have to do something interesting.
Money.
Don't mind me. I gotta eat this house. One time we were going to, because it would fence it all in, we were going to keep deer. But then someone told us that they'll eat all the plants.
Okay.
So you actually, it's mind, and then an aspect of that is intelligence, an aspect of that is false ego. That's actually, so the mind is the bigger picture, these are parts of it. But what they're not still not considering is that this is still different from the citta. So they'll consider these elements of what the citta is doing. If we discuss citta, let's just say, yes, that's the mind, and that's the mind, and that element of memory, that's part of the intelligence, that's actually a subsection of the mind. So they won't, for them, they won't catch the point. Citta denotes all the fluctuating and changing phenomena of the mind. According to yoga, the mind is like a vast lake, on the surface of which arise many different kinds of waves. Deep within, the mind is always calm and tranquil. But one's thought patterns stir into activity and prevent it from realizing its own true nature. Right? So it can't realize its own true nature, though it's stirred by itself. So that's always the problem, is they don't catch that there's something else, right? Because they're just saying, it's like, material energy is just there on its own, and somehow or another, the jiva can't appreciate the difference between it and the material nature. So material nature therefore manifests itself, and then because of that, the soul then takes on that consciousness and connecting with that. Then there's this whole pastime that you spend, you know, billions of lifetimes in the material world, until you figure out you're actually different from material energy, and that, and then you're happy with that, and then you go back to that state of, you know, just that, you know, being just, you know, your unconscious, whatever it is, and material energy goes back to pradhan. Right, you know, but the point is how would all that happen? Where does that potency come from? Why would the soul have this need to know who they are? Right, you know, does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's not answered here. It's not answered. What's the big deal? Why eat the apple? You know, and why is it that eating the apple and knowing something, there's a problem? Because now the knowledge is polluted.
Yeah.
Right, so therefore the activity is going to be polluted. So one has to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And that's here.
So there's no motivation without relationship.
It's no motivation without relationship. Yeah, basically, you can say. But here is that there's the idea is that how do you view relationship? As a means of your own enjoyment or a means as, you know, in relationship to the Lord? That's actually what you do. So relationship is the bottom line.
Yeah.
You know, sambandhabhide and prayojan is defining relationship. So it's simply, is your relationship with the Lord or the relationship is without the Lord? That's all. So therefore, why the soul would have this anxiety and why would matter suddenly transform? Because why, it means, is it simply just out of that, this whole phenomena is going on because you want to know? One guy wants to know, and the whole thing happens, you know? So, and then when you go back, it all disappears. So there's only you. So which one of us is the one who's thinking about this, right? Or is it someone else? You know, right? You know, so it always keeps going back, you know? So there's, I think there was something, there's the world, and there's the whole thing, and all these going on, and then other you know, worlds and that, and then it pulls back, you know? And it comes back, and then there's you know, the man sitting there with kind of balding head, and he's sitting there and in his big armchair and reading the newspaper and all that, and then his wife is there, you know, just you know, and she has a fly swatter, right? And she moves, you know, as it moves back, Then you see then the earth becomes just some little thing sitting on the guy's head. She says, don't move, I'll get it. Like that, you know. So like this, you can end up with, you know, a lot of, you know, how you say, you know, movie, you know, screenplays and all that kind of stuff like that. But the problem is that it's not understood is that this is all coming from the Lord. It's the Lord's potency and it's the Lord's desire. Therefore, it's happening. Otherwise, why would over one minuscule little living entity, the whole material energy? That means you have to have a lot of false ego to think the Pradhan's going to change for you. Right? No, it changed for me. No, for me. So you're the causer? No, I'm not the causer. You can be the causer. It's got to be a lot of false ego.
Yes.
A lot of false ego. So the point is no, it's God's will. That's why it opens in Manu. It's God's will. It's His. He desires it, therefore it happens.
Mm.
But He only desires it because the living entities have material consciousness. So to fulfill their desires, He desires material energy transforms. But the living entity has already made the choice and taken up polluted consciousness. Right, because the ones that don't take up polluted this, don't develop this polluted consciousness, then they develop love for God and are situated within this spiritual world. Does that make sense?
So, Maharaj, this principle of the Lord willing is also aligned with the principle that He is always willing to serve His counterparts.
The point is it's all relationship means service, right? Because anamoy means concentrated sense gratification. Pranamoy is extended. Right? So the whole point is, and that's where you say relationships start, because anamoy, there's no question of relationships. But you can say it starts there. You know, so the point is the consideration. The Varnashram system, why it's such a problem, is you have an identity and you have to follow it, because if you don't, it bothers everybody else. You know what I'm saying? Like, why does the king have to protect? You know, because I mean, you know, everybody wants all the power and all the money, like that. But if you have to protect along with it, then it's kind of like, you know, okay, you know, then you know, we have to get serious here. You know, saying everybody wants to make all the money in the world, but then you have to give it away in charity and taxes. You know, and take care of the people who work for you. You know, so all these things are there. So that's what Varnashram defines. It defines who you are and what you're supposed to do. Right, that's why people don't like it. You know, because they say, "Oh, it doesn't work." It's like saying God's gravity doesn't work. It's Kali Yuga gravity doesn't work. It's Kali Yuga the sun doesn't. You know, if you stand out in the sun, you don't get warm or get sunburned. It's Kali Yuga water doesn't make you wet, or fire isn't hot, or air doesn't blow. If you stand out in the air and it's cold, you get sick. You know, it's Kali Yuga, ether doesn't work, so when you say something, it doesn't go through the ether, it kind of stops it. That's why they have to have 10,000 megawatts sitting there, otherwise the audience can't hear them, like that, you know, because the ether, there's some problem with the ether, right? Does that make sense?
Right.
Yeah. So, no, it's all there. It's just the problem is because of polluted consciousness, we don't want to acknowledge that I'm not the center of the universe. Because Varnashram is the first step in understanding you're not the center of the universe, because animals function on anamoy. And some of them a little higher, there's the concept of pranamoy. You know, they work in a group. You know, they work as a herd. You know, elephants, they work as a group. They take care. It doesn't matter whose baby it is. It's a baby of the herd. You know, the ants, they all work together. There's the queen. They all do their duties. So there's some extended element. So we consider them a little bit superior. But still, it's anamoy. So human life means you've moved from that, and then you take up dharma. Right? So because that's where it begins. Because anamoy and pranamoy, you know, your kama and artha still aren't human, because the living entity, the rat. Now, is that not artha, that he's gone out in the field and, you know, stolen 40 kilos of grain and stuffed it into this hole where he lives? That's not artha, right? And because of that, he becomes very proud. He's very confident, right? There's that one story in Niti that there's this one sadhu. He was living in this place, and another sadhu was traveling. He happened to come and stayed for a few days with him. So while he was there, he was observing that this sadhu, he would keep you know, they, you know, whatever they beg, and there was be a little bit left, and you keep it in a bowl and put it up quite high. I mean, very high. But then the you know, the one would go to sleep. The other one was there, and he must have been, you know, some way awake, you know, considering things or chanting or contemplating. And he saw this rat come, and this rat, he would jump so high, way higher than a rat would normally jump. And then he'd get those grains and then take them away. And he was thinking, how is this possible? You know, how does this rat jump so high? And he was thinking about it, and then the discussion that came up is because he's confident. Because he has such a store of grains. He's so confident that, you know, basically, you know, as far as the rat goes, you know, he's super rat. You know, he can do, you know, amazing things. So then they decided, you know, because it's a problem, the rat, and, you know, also his ego is there, you know, he's coming stealing these out of his grains. So therefore, then they looked around, found his hole, found his store of grains, and took that. So then the next day, the pot was there, and he came, and he couldn't jump that high at all. He could only jump like a normal rat. Does that make sense? So even the rat becomes confident when he has, you know, his artha is great. So ants are collecting artha. Everybody's collecting for like that. Mm. So in other words, anamoy and pranamoy, that's common with the animals. And they're very good at it. Mm. Right? You know what I'm saying? Stick you in the middle of a jungle, will you survive? But the animals are all there surviving. Mm. You know, they've been there for generations. You know? Like that, no books. I just figured it out. You know. Go find out that there's a special, yeah, special bookshop. You know, like that. Success, seven habits of successful tigers. You know, and then for the deers, slow dad, quick dad. go out there, yeah. Yes.
If that mind is always calm and tranquil deep inside, is it that its nature?
Because the mind is produced by goodness. So by nature, the mind likes to be in goodness. If it's in goodness, it's peaceful. Like that. So the point is passion, ignorance are what will disturb the mind. So that would be disturbed by the external. So that's why they talk about the waves. Because that will be from the present conditioning. So the waves of the present conditioning and how you want to control and enjoy, that will be what is the passion ignorance that is disturbing the mind. But what they miss out on is that only in pure goodness, then you can have complete, only...
confidence.
Yeah. Like that. I see. One's got four legs, one's got two legs, so who's going to win? So then... Yeah, so the pure goodness is there, and the pure goodness then means that there is no passion or ignorance. But you can only have pure goodness if you're transcendentally situated. So now they're getting themselves to the spiritual platform mechanically. So it's actually artificial. Right? But it's artificial meaning it's not a permanent place. It's natural for the living entity, because living entity being tatasta, being in the spiritual platform is normal. Right? But then what you do in that spiritual platform, whether you acknowledge the Lord or don't, that's the choice. You acknowledge, then you move into prema. You don't acknowledge, you move into the material world. Right? So getting back to there is feasible, because that's the natural neutral position of the jiva. Right? You know, the beginning stage. But developing love for Krishna, because we're part and parcel of him, that's the normal state. The actual normal state. The mature normal state. But they're only coming up to that once, so then they don't understand polluted consciousness. Therefore, the mind will be disturbed again. So from deep within, it's actually that's where it's becoming disturbed. They're only noticing the results of the ripple on the top. So in theory, they're correct, only if it's applied with devotional service. In other words, if you apply these all these different systems according to Vedanta, they're all correct. Mm-hmm. But if you apply them without Vedanta, then they're not correct. Does that make sense? Like the cooking principles are correct if you apply it to cooking for Krishna. But if you don't cook for Krishna, then they're not correct. Right? Does that make sense? So the problem is not the mechanics. The problem is the consciousness. Because cooking for Krishna is consciousness. So that's what they don't include here. Because their whole idea is always to get rid of consciousness because it's come up from contact with material energy. Right? But they don't understand this. That's where they're seeing. So they're seeing is, okay, that means the effect of having polluted consciousness is I'm interested in the material world. So that's where they see that step. So they'll say, therefore, it's that contact there. But they don't understand that the step before that was from the spiritual platform, they already made that decision. So you have to correct that one. So they're not taking it far enough. Right? They're getting close, but they don't understand that you get back to there, then you still have the choice. Do you act on the spiritual or material? But if you don't know what the spiritual activity is, how will you make it as a choice? Because it's never discussed. Right? But that's why we're always discussing the spiritual choice. You know what I'm saying? In other words, if you only discuss the pastimes of the Lord and not the philosophy and the process to see that you're properly absorbed in that, then that's an overbalance, right? And if you're only discussing how to purify yourself and this and that and the modes of nature and all these kind of things and not discussing the Lord's pastimes, it's overbalanced that way. So that was what was appreciated in Vaishnava Dasa, that fine discrimination, that he could see exactly where, so it had the right balance of both. Right? Then it's clear. Does that make sense? Yes.
So again, I come to the point where we can see that the six systems connected to devotional service are two, just tools,
yes,
for that.
Yes.
When you take it apart, then when the problem starts.
Yes, yes, yes. That's the whole point, is that they're all parts of devotional service. So, but because they've been disconnected, they have their own identity. And like devotees, when they talk about yoga, much of the time in the West, they'll identify it as something separate. It's its own. There's devotional, and then there's yoga. No, there's yoga, and there's so. And then you can, but you can have yoga that's connected to the Lord, or yoga not connected to the Lord. So it's not a separate system. It's just, you know what I'm saying? It's just misapplied. Mechanics they'll keep the same, but the philosophy's lacking. So therefore, it doesn't give the right effect. You know what I'm saying? Because the materialist, why is he doing yoga? He wants his mind to be peaceful, right? We're just discussing here. Why does he want a peaceful mind? Because he's in such anxiety from trying to control and enjoy material energy. So he wants that little peace of mind. But once he gets that peace of mind and he's satisfied with it, then he'll have fresh enthusiasm to control and enjoy material energy. That's what it's for. It's not that having done it, now they're going to sit back and become detached and great yogis. No, they're not. They're just going to go back into it. So it's just some. It's like a vacation. But, you know, going to the Bahamas doesn't work anymore. You know, so now they try yoga. Forget that relax, how you say it? That freedom from the anxiety. Because before it was just, the person accepts his duties, and so therefore the difficulty of the duties or the difficulties in the vacation are just accepted as part of the way life is. You know, because it's the relationships, the interactions, and both of them are trouble. But they're different trouble. You know what I'm saying? That the point is that it's different. Right? But now, because of lack of understanding, there's so much emotional and mental anxiety. Therefore, they want relief from that. They want a vacation from that. And so they're finding in this New Age thing, there's some idea, only because it's discussing the mode of goodness, which none of them within that system actually understand. That the attractive element of the New Age aspects or the philosophy is the aspect of goodness. But they can't identify. They're just being nice, being good, being. So they've dropped it down to pranamoy. So it's not even philosophical anymore. So it's just morality. right? And then you have some of them are theistic and some of them are not. But in general, they try to play down the theistic element. You know, so it's getting pretty low end. But for an animal, it's a step up. You know, but for a devotee, it's a serious step down. I mean, serious. Like that. You know, it's just like you're cooking in the kitchen. Oh, are you cooking for Krishna? No, we're not fanatic. We're just trying to be good and nice and harmonize with everything in the kitchen, you know, so, you know, everything doesn't, you know, the potato and the fire, everything, you know, is all balanced and all nice. Now, would you say that this devotee, wow, he's hit on something here. Yeah, no, he's, you know, somebody hit him with one of the pans. You know, so there's a problem here. He's missed the whole point. Like that. So that's New Age. You just throw it into that and talk like that and make it like that. And so it's, you know, but the mode of goodness is the path of least resistance. But they don't understand they're talking about the mode of goodness. So we're always talking about that. But because we talk about it like this and oh, like that. No, you got to talk about it like this. then it becomes good. You know, like that. So that's the problem. So because citta is not considered. They think it's just make adjustments in the mind, the intelligence, the ego. You know, I'm not such a, you know, controller. Now I'm more, I adjust with everybody. And, you know, it's not all about me. But it's others' emotions also. And, you know, it's not just only intelligent. You know, it's the emotions are there. At the same time, it's not just emotions. We're not just sentimental. You know, we're using our brains here. You know, we went to university. We got our degree. You know, all these different things. But the point is the citta is not mentioned. So that's the difficulty. New Age means it'll never get to citta. Because it's not in the philosophy. Mm-hmm. It's just not there. Mm-hmm. Right? Because they're not using karma mimamsa. Right? So most are using the yoga system. Mm-hmm. And generally, even they don't even know the shankhya aspect of it, which is a development of. So it's just the sentimental aspects of yoga. But it's not there. So it can't help. That's the point. Yes.
Maharaj, the Sankhya takes that impersonalist element, and then the yoga in the West now takes a lot of that. So most of the teachers. Then.
So if they do take something, they take the Shankara Vedanta.
Yeah.
At best.
Yeah.
And that one or two things, you know.
So the idea that not having addressed citta, they cannot have that, except if they took devotional service, because that's the only system which we would address.
Yes. Because otherwise, even they take Vedanta, unfortunately, they take Shankara's Vedanta. So that's the sixth of the six bogus philosophies. Right? Like that. Because the actual philosophy is Vedanta, but Vaishnav. Right? That's like that. Because the sixth system is Vedanta, but it itself has six systems. So Shankara is just one. Right? And then the other five are Vaishnav. Like that. And then of the Vaishnav, then you have each one. One, it's, you know, purified oneness, special oneness. It's one and two, you know, or it's only two. But Achinta, Bheda, Bheda, Tattva already includes them. So as if you look at it, we're dealing with the highest philosophy. But somehow or another we don't understand, like, you know, giving a, you know, 5-carat diamond to a kid. You know, they don't understand, you know. You know, Barbie likes it, yeah. Where is it? I don't know. You know. It was here. Ken took it. Right?
That's how it is.
Yeah. Well, you decided you liked the cheerleader Barbie instead of, you know, this Barbie, yeah.
Maharaj, we mentioned the term full-time devotional service a couple of times today, and I just wanted to ask you, so we've been taught...
Does that mean moving into the temple?
That's another door. So I just wanted to ask, if one is engaging in direct devotional service, the dancing, the chanting, and also you've got the nomitic activity, if that nomitic activity is in line with pleasing the Lord, that's still
considered full devotional service.
Yeah.
But the point is at one point you get tired of you know, touching your nose by wrapping it around your head. You understand? Because naimittic means it's always the indirect path.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because if the Krishna is the important, then what directly connects to him will be the most important. And the other things are not. But if it's there, it's part of the duties, you don't have a problem doing it. So you don't have a problem doing the work for Krishna. But at some point, one prefers the more direct elements. That's why the natural thing is you get properly trained. Then in, you know, that middle stage, one deals with the material energy and tries to engage all those things in the Lord's service. But eventually one comes to the point of reducing it back down to the naimittic, down to the minimal, and making the nityas the prominent.
Yes. You know. And if you can see that naimittic or that category is slowly fading,
yes,
but you wish to increase that speed of letting it go, does that mean you just basically associate with devotees a lot?
Yeah, you associate, you see that the quality of your hearing and chanting, you know, is improved, contemplating, practicing, like that. But let it go at the natural speed it goes, right? Because if one does it too quickly, then there's a gap, and so that'll create anxiety. But if one's determined, one can speed it up quite quickly. You know, in other words, figure it works like on the parabolic. You know, it starts off a little slow and then it goes very quickly. You know, does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So, it's just a matter of time. It's momentum. It's like Ayurvedic medicine. You take it regularly. The main thing of Ayurvedic medicine is taking it regularly. If you don't take it regularly, it doesn't really work. But what it does is it builds up. So, you know, one dose has a certain level of potency. But if you take it regularly, then all those doses together build up and it has much more power. So that's why that regularity, that's why much of the time devotees don't have results with Ayurveda, simply because they can't take it regularly. Like that. Because it's medicine, the mode of goodness, so mode of goodness means regular. So that therefore, if you don't live a lifestyle of goodness, it's harder to use. Like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that can refer to our sadhana as well being regular.
Yes, sadhana regular, everything. Anything you do regularly, you develop, you know, even if it's just a little bit, you know, even if the sadhana is just a little bit, but if it's done regularly every day, it works like that. Okay. Though these thought patterns are the waves appearing and disappearing on the surface of the lake of the mind. Depending on the size, strength, and speed of the waves, the inner state of the lake is obscured to a greater or lesser degree. Right? So the greater the desire, the stronger the desire, the more one's moving on them, then the more it will obscure the natural peaceful state of the mind. Right? But still, deeper within that's the polluted conscious. So you change the polluted consciousness, then you're working on a different platform. Because now you're directly, instead of that, you're working mechanically to get rid of the waves. You're just taking the waves and connecting them to Krishna. So it doesn't matter, actually, that they're there. And by doing that, one naturally, by knowledge and detachment, loses interest in them as that. And then the mind goes peaceful. But now it actually goes peaceful because there won't be the underlying element of the polluted consciousness to actually agitate the whole thing. Right. The more one is able to calm one's thought patterns, the more the inner state of the mind is unveiled. It is not very difficult to calm down the waves of thought patterns on the surface of the lake of the mind. But it's very difficult to calm down those unrhythmic and destructive waves of thought patterns that arise from the bottom. Memories are like time bombs buried in the lake bed of mind that explode at certain times and disturb the entire lake. So that they can't understand where that comes from.
Mm-hmm.
You get rid of the polluted consciousness. So the point is why shouldn't, what's the problem with the particular material desire? It's not the desire itself, it's because I desire it separate from Krishna. That's the actual problem. Does that make sense? So therefore, at some point, these things will have to come up. Like that. So here he's saying, it's not very difficult, meaning the polluted consciousness is the greater thing. So we've been given, and it's just one thing. I'm not the controller, I'm not the enjoyer, right? That's why we always talk about Krishna is the supreme controller and Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, right? Because otherwise it's kind of like, you know, we figure that the post is open. You know, it's, you know, it's like, you know. Is that kind of, yeah.
So Maharaj, we talk about the seeds in the heart.
Yes.
The desire. So this chitta element, which planted the first seed, continues to give seeds, and that's...
Yeah. But now so the waves are the specific seeds, but the general just that you want to control and enjoy, because in other words, you're going on and maybe you control thoughts in one way, but then they'll come up somewhere else. You know, like the guy, you know, calms it down in one place at work or in the family and this and that, and then suddenly gets a, you know, a bug that he's got to, you know, go on a, you know, world expedition or something. Or, you know what I'm saying? Just comes up somewhere else, because all it is that desire to control and enjoy is not working through the one area. Or he's seen that it's a problem, so you have to reduce it. But the principle of controlling and joy he hasn't addressed. So therefore, the same thing will just come up in a different manifestation. Then he'll think, oh, that's okay. Because the problem was, is, you know, I was dealing like this at work or at home, and so now I've got that into a balance, and that's been harmonized and all that, but now, you know, we need to do something fresh, something, you know, there's lots of nice language how to distract yourself that you've just, you know, come up with some new idiot stuff, right? So that's mental speculation. The mind, it uses the intelligence only to convince itself and others that what it's thought up is good. Mm. Yeah. You know. Does that make sense? Yeah.
I was discussing with a coach trainer once, and we came to that conclusion. It's quite frustrating that you can align yourself in one area, but very soon it just gets unaligned. You're always the same problems again and again. And yeah. It was just like my business just, you know, like doing little bits, patchwork here and there, but you'll never solve. So the person, when we kind of talked, that was kind of drawn back. Said, I can't solve it.
Yes.
You align a person's disharmonies now, but
they'll come out again. Because the principles you want to control and enjoy. So when, see, what's the purpose of, means, now, it means those who are intelligent and successful have understood that it's through control and restriction that there's progress, right? So therefore, they target certain areas, you know, your personal life or your personal dealings or your time or your working with others or how you know, apply yourself in your work, you know, and all these different things that they're trying to affect some success. They know that it's through control by regulation that it works. But the difficulty is that what is the purpose of regulation for? Why should there be progress? It's not moving towards my controlling and enjoying is not progress. That's the other end, right? One end of the path is pure love for Krishna. The other end is, you know, the complete absorption, you know, the demoniac nature of I'm the supreme controller and enjoyer. So what they're doing is mistaking that is going to progress them forward to a higher state, but actually they use it to develop the facility that they can get better facilities, but they're moving the consciousness to a lower state. So that's why there's this, you know, because it should be that people who are successful are the ones that you're looking at as, you know, role models, but they're the ones that generally one looks at the authorities misusing it, everything like this, because they've applied themselves, they're successful, but then they misapply it into their own sense gratification. Right? And so constantly you're seeing that this is what's happening. Because otherwise, how does the person get up to that level? Right? It's through control. He's elevated himself. But his purpose in doing that is to control and enjoy. And if the conscience is not purified, that it's in the mode of goodness or control and enjoy, or in the heavenly planets, then it may progress. You see the good qualities still developing, right? Up to a point, you know, and then again, samsari brings you down. But here, they're working in a smaller circle, like that. So as soon as they get up and get facilities, immediately that desire to control and enjoy comes out, and then it drops down again. Does that make sense? So they're contradictory. So the point is the reason that you're controlling and regulating things is to elevate yourself to God consciousness. That's the real purpose. It's a misapplication to use that for fruitive gain or for liberation. Right? Because eventually they'll bring you down again. It's just the nature of them. So it's understood there must be regulation. So then that regulation should elevate you, but at the same time you have to cultivate the philosophy. If you don't cultivate the philosophy, then your successful endeavor won't work. Right? And if you oppose that, no, you know, we've seen so many successful people and they take advantage and they exploit and all this, so we won't, you know, we won't deal properly, then there won't be any facilities for anybody. Right? And so then again you just have, you know, people, you know, just like a, you know, you have the pile of garbage and all the animals fighting over the garbage. You know. So in any case, it's not going to be good. So you can't oppose authority and regulation, but at the same time, authority and regulation is only for the purpose of elevating one to the transcendental platform. Right? So these systems have understood it up to the level of transcendence, but they haven't gotten rid of a polluted consciousness. Right? So that's the thing, is that you can see from these things is that it's not about midlife. Midlife crisis just means whatever your plan was, you see it didn't actually work. And it's not because of the particular plan you chose. It's any plan you chose, it won't work. Right? You know, the successful guy, you know, he's got to relax and take it easy. And the guy who was taking it easy, he's got to get it together. You know what I'm saying? So each one of them is having their own crisis, and it's exactly the opposite of the other. So all it is it's designed that once you work with material energy for a certain amount of time, you see it doesn't work. So what are you supposed to do? Go to the next step of don't endeavor for that. Just endeavor for spiritual. So that's where the naimitta gets dropped and the nitya becomes the pronoun. That's called vanaprastha. Right? That's what it's for. But in the modern scenario, it didn't work, so try a new one. So in other words, it's a second wave of grihastha. Where it's supposed to be vanaprastha, they're using it to that second. The ones who are more successful, the other ones just go nuts. You know? Yeah, it's just a matter of whether you go nuts at 60 or at 80. You know, that's all. You have your choice. You know, it's like that. Does that make sense? It's a very clear, simple, you know, system like that. And it's just all these others, they have very good points. You know, and you see the mechanics of how it works is here, is that you can calm that, but the only way you can really calm it is by changing the chitta. Because otherwise, even you use, let's say you have good qualities and good control, but it'll pop up somewhere else. Because when you control it, it's meant to elevate. But if we've taken that elevation means furthering our controlling and enjoying, then it will drop down again. You know, so we've controlled it. So now that spontaneity, the freshness is not there because we don't know how to do it according to authority. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so yeah.
It's interesting because when we're detached, looking at it, it's like we're looking at it from above instead of down into the maze, and you can't see what's around the next corner. Yes. It becomes very simple.
It's very simple. That's why the Vedanta philosophy is it's discussed and it's understood. It's very simple. It just takes time to put everything in place. You know what I'm saying? That's all. It's because we're not used to it. Mm. But with time, it's very simple. It's very straightforward. But there's a lot of elements only because life's complicated. So that's why there needs to be so many aspects of the philosophy to deal with it.
And our mind is very used to finding different angles to look at it from, so we have to deal with all of those.
Yeah, so it's just so all the angles you would deal with, you have a sophisticated enough understanding of Vedanta that all those systems, you know, fall into place. All the different,
Maharaj, why is it that the chanting of the holy name brings up the pollution even more?
It's not a matter of bringing up more, it makes you aware of what's there. You know, it's just like you walk by the closet every day. You know, but the holy name just opens the door. It's not that the holy name put all that garbage in the closet. No, you did. It just makes you aware of what's there, because the point is you got to get rid of it. So unless you're aware of it, how will it go away? Like that. Because you consciously made a choice to put it there, so you consciously make the choice to let it go. So when these things come up, then we contemplate them and this and that and become attached to them again and No, as they come up, it's just let them go. All it is they're just going by. You just let them go, they go. But we contemplate them. Then that's the problem. Does that make sense? So therefore the Vedic system is what we're saying, Bhaktivinoda Thakura, is since these naimittic things are coming up, if you contemplate them, contemplate them in connection with authority, with what Guru Sadhana Shastra says, in connection with the Lord, then something that will degrade you, you've actually turned it around and made it progressive. But as we mentioned before, is that at some point one gets tired, the soul gets tired of dealing with these externals that actually don't give much of a result. But it's so difficult. You know what I'm saying?
What do you mean difficult?
Let's say taking care of a house, it's your house. Right? You want lots of facilities, right? You have a house, you have the living room, you have, you know, the bedroom, you have the kids' rooms, you have bathrooms, you have the laundry room, you have a nice kitchen, you need a place to put all the stuff, you know, you got your garage, like that, you know what I'm saying? And then you can go on, you know, if you're more sophisticated, then you have your places of entertainment and this and that, or libraries or places of work. Right? Okay, so now if you have that, that's comfortable. Now everything that you want to do in your life is taken care of. But now you have to take care of that. You have to keep it clean. You have to keep it up to date. You have to, you know, like that. It takes work. So after a while, the point is you think I require all that to chant Hare Krishna. But you don't require it to chant Hare Krishna. So at one point, you get tired of taking care of all that just to chant Hare Krishna. I can sit down in the front yard and chant Hare Krishna. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, we do sit down to the simple things.
Yes, just what's simple and easy, like that. You know, so the kids grow up and they take care of the house and all that, and you just live in the little corner over there, then great. But if not, then, you know, you go to something smaller. You know what I'm saying? So that's the meaning of anaprastha, is that the naimittic elements aren't so important anymore. So just what's comfortable, you know, comfortable Prabhupada defines as it's not uncomfortable. So you have enough facility that you don't have to worry about it, but not so much that you have to worry about it. Right? So you have to find that balance. How much I don't think about it, and, you know, if I have less than that, I'm worried about it. If I have more than that, I have to worry about it. So what's the point of how much I require that just comes naturally? I don't have to think about it. Right? That's the balance. And for each person, it's going to be different. Some person having a huge palace, that for them is normal. They're comfortable. You know what I'm saying? So it's like that. But they have servants. That means they have money to take care of servants. They know how to deal with servants. So the servants do what they want. And so it works nicely. So they come out, spend a little time in the day seeing this and that, telling this and that, you know, working out the money, paying everybody, and that's it. It's done. Or someone else, that same amount of time, then they would have gone around and, you know, picked things up and put the book back and done all this and that, and it's done. So the point is how much is not an anxiety? More than that, you get an anxiety. That's too much. That's what it means. Over endeavor. So it's a matter of everybody's individual. So this thing is, no, what I'm doing now, that's what the whole world should be doing. That's how most people work. You know? If they're not conscious, so they don't care what everybody else does, but once they become conscious of it, whatever they're conscious of, that the whole world's got to do. You know?
Yeah, why didn't you buy this one in the fridge? I told you to buy this. I like this kind of sweets. Why didn't you buy this one? The Govindas run out of these sort of sweets. And, no, I like this kind of sweets. Like, they create a philosophy out of their own kind of sweets.
Yeah. But the point is, do you like Krishna or do you like that kind of sweet? Because the point is, prasad is Krishna. So is it Krishna you like or the sweet you like? So if Krishna comes in that form, then, you know, nice. But if he doesn't, the point is it's Krishna. Yes, sir.
There are some forms he's easier recognizable.
Easily recognizable.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. It means like a bucket of halibut.
Just, that's a for instance, yeah. Right.
If there's only a little bit of halibut, so you call that halibut? What's this?
Where's Krishna?
Yeah, where's Krishna? Krishna's big. He's unlimited. He's the supreme. Yeah. Okay. There are two main sources for the arising waves of thoughts: sense perceptions and memories. Right? And so, in other words, what's coming in now and what you remember that's coming before. When the waves of a lake are stilled and the water is clear, one can look deep down and see the bottom of the lake. Likewise, when one's thought patterns are quieted, one can see one's innermost potentials hidden deep within the mind. You could use this in a seminar.
Yes.
Because the mind is an evolute of Prakriti. See the previous chapter on Shankya philosophy. It is composed of... that 11. It is composed of the elements of Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas. Right, because that's where they're coming out of. Right, so the mind's coming out of goodness, the intelligence out of passion, and the false ego out of ignorance. The relative proportions of these three qualities determine the different states of citta, conditioned consciousness. The turmoil caused by the interaction of the gunas is responsible for the arising thought patterns in the mind. Right? So it's the gunas that are responsible. They're just doing it. You've done an activity, so the result comes. Right? Mm. So maybe now you don't want it, but it comes now. Mm. You know?
I know that.
The 20th bucket of halibut. Did I order that? You ordered another 5.
No, not again.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. So the modes of nature just automatically do this by your past reactions. And so they're automatically coming. So now you connect it to Krishna, then they don't create that reaction. So therefore, the mind becomes peaceful. Or you have to mechanically go through, you know, catch the mind. It can't look at anything. It can't focus on anything. And try to get it to stop functioning in that way. So that means you have to tie yourself up like a pretzel and stop breathing. That's how you can do that. Otherwise, your other alternative is bhakti yoga, which means you're connected to the Lord. Right?
Arjuna didn't like that one very much, to be tied up. And
well, it depends. If Germans, they like pretzels, but, you know, other than that, then some. Yeah, so.
So let's do the last one.
It's not halibut, it's pretzels.
Yes.
Okay, 5 stages of mind. The mind is described in 5 stages, depending on the degree of its transparency. Disturbed, kshipta, stupefied, mudha, restless, vishipta, one-pointed, ekagra, and well-controlled, nirudha. Rudha. Isn't that connected with that? What is it? Those yoga rudha. Yoga rukshu. Maybe it has something
rukshu
to do with this.
Rukshu was the top one.
A rukshu.
And rudra was the beginning.
Okay.
The other way around.
Yeah, so here is something that connects. Predominance of Rajas and Tamas causes the mind to be disturbed, shipta. Because of the predominance of Rajas, the mind becomes hyperactive. Because of the predominance of Tamas, it loses its quality of discrimination. Thus, it flits from one object to another without resting on any. That's why, you see, disturbed is the lowest state. Then you think stupefied would be, no, that should be the lowest state. But stupefied means you have to focus on something long enough to actually be stupefied by it. Right? But in Kshipta, it's focused on this, then it's on that, and this, and so many options are there into which one to take. So that's the person who never gets anything done. So the mode of ignorance is there, then passion comes up a little bit, then they look, then the mode of ignorance, and then like that. So you need more passion to actually be stupefied. Thus it flits through. Okay. It is constantly disturbed by external stimuli, but it does not know how to discriminate what is beneficial from what is useless. Right? So they can't really tell because the mode of ignorance is prominent. Mm. So something's coming because it's mainly ignorance, but a touch of passion is there. So things come up, but this and that, but you can't focus. Mm. So that person never really gets anything done. So they're just always disturbed. Mm. Right? And then that's the element Bhagavatam mentions in the Kali Yuga. People are always disturbed because all these things are coming up. You know, and more successful ones are stupefied. How to move from being disturbed to stupefied?
Yeah, in 30 days. Huh? In 30 days,
yeah. In the second stage, mudha, the mind is dominated by tamas, which is characterized by inertia, vice, ignorance, lethargy, and sleep. In this stage, mind is so sluggish it loses its capability to think properly and becomes negative and dull. In the restless stage, Vikshipta, there is the predominance of rajas. In this state, the mind runs from one object to another, but never stays anywhere consistently. This is an advanced stage of the disturbed mind.
Advanced?
Huh? So advanced.
Yes, he's advanced.
No, but what's the difference? The first and the third?
Mm. Unless stupefied is, it got it backwards here, but it's not. This is the order. Yeah, this is the original. Okay, so there's something here. Because he says the second stage, I can only think is that it's more transparent because it's not disturbed by so many disturbances. Does that make sense? Means when it's disturbed, it's running all over the place, and then it comes to the next stage where it's not disturbed. So it seems to be in a certain way peaceful, but it's just dull. So in one sense, you could say it's on this level, if your goal is to get the lake completely still and clear, you know, at least you got clear. I mean, still. Maybe not clear. Right? Does that make sense? Means, what is the goal in yoga? Yoga is trying to make the mind peaceful. So if one is in total ignorance, the mind is in one sense, you could say, in that direction. It's peaceful. So you could say it's a step in that direction by it's not got so much stimuli bothering it. Right?
I didn't understand.
Well, in other words, what I was discussing before then would be a later stage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that. So we dropped it down too early. So it's the mudha is that it's restless, then it becomes calm like this. Then, disturbed. Then we get to the next, it's restless.
That's the difference.
That's the three. Oh, and then the rest, okay, I didn't catch that one. In the restless stage, there's predominance of rajas. In this state, the mind runs from one object to another, but never stays anywhere consistently. This is an advanced stage of the disturbed mind. Right, so in other words, there's disturbed, it runs everywhere but can't do anything with anything. Then it becomes, you know, dull. Then it becomes more running, a little bit more focused, but still it's not enough. Right? Because if you look at it, the materialist, he has so many things he wants to get done. Right? And so the materialist is doing all these different things. So they're actually in a stage of, you know, disturbed or restless. Right? So that's the difficulty. Now this system that's here is also going to work on anything because it's how the mind works. But they're using this system to make the mind peaceful so that you can meditate on the super soul.
Isn't there a parallel to what we were doing last year about, there was also something about engaging the mind when we come to Krishna consciousness, sudden enthusiasm?
Yes. You say that means you have that immediate enthusiasm. Then you have, you know, sometimes you're enthusiastic, sometimes not. Then you're kind of trying to figure out. And then you make a decision. Yes. And then there's that, it doesn't always work so well. And then it starts to work well. like that. So it's you do get the because it's just how the mind functions. Okay.
If it be is that those three stages among karmic people, that's all they go around. They get disturbed, then probably restless, and just to get a little more peaceful, then they stoop.
Yeah. Because after a while, it says a stoop fight is better than being restless.
And drinking and all intoxication.
Yeah. And then when they get bored of that, then again you get
restless.
You know, then they go for a higher stage or a lower stage.
So they never leave that circle. Yeah.
Basically not. Here the one pointed, they just focus on, they prioritize, so they're trying to do that, but they're only prioritizing within basically restless. You know, in other words, they have so many things that they, you know, which one to do now. But here, actually, like one pointed means it's only on one point. It doesn't go to all these different things. You know, like that. But the principle is there. That's why you'll see some people will talk about these things, because it's how the mind works. And they'll pick something up from yoga or from their own experience. But they're misapplying it. Just like yoga is misapplying it, in that they're not taking the meditation on the Lord as an eternal principle. But they're taking it as a temporary step to get to a higher thing of liberation. So it's also being misapplied, but it's being misapplied in a very scientific way. You know, the science works, but it's just their goal is wrong. These first three stages of the mind are negative and act as impediments in the path of growth and exploration. This level one experiences pain and misery and all kinds of unpleasant emotions. But the next two stages are more calm and peaceful. All the modifications are found in the earlier three stages. In the one-pointed and well-controlled states, there are no modifications at all. In the one-pointed state of mind, ekagra, there is predominance of sattva, the light aspect of prakriti. This is a tranquil state near to complete stillness in which the real nature of things is revealed. This fourth state is conducive to concentration, and the aim of the yoga system is to develop or maintain the state of mind for as long as consistently as possible. In the well-controlled state of mind, niruta, there is no disturbance at all, but a pure manifestation of sattvic energy, right? But they haven't gotten the pure sattva. That's the like that. So even though they remove everything, then there'll still be, from the bottom of the mind, the material desire come up. You know, it may not be specific, it's just the desire for material. In this state, consciousness reflects its purity and entirety in the mirror of the mind, and one becomes capable of exploring one's true nature. Because if one can look at what's conditioning, what are all the different things, very nicely, because one's not attached to them. Right? But if one's attached, distracted by this, or you focus on this, it takes you off, focus on that, it takes you off, then it'll be a problem. But here, you can look at it very nicely and just see it for what it is. Right? Then it becomes easy to deal and know what to do. So that's why these upper points are recommended. Right? Because the lower are always going to be a distraction. Only the last two states of mind are positive and helpful for meditation. And many yoga practices are designed to help one attain these states. When all the modifications cease and the state of stillness acquired, then Purusha, pure consciousness, sees its real nature reflected from the screen of the mind. Right? So then problem is then like in the Shankya, then Purusha, it means the living entity, then is seeing itself. Right? But they're not seeing that itself is actually servant of Krishna. So that's where the weakness lies. So again, the whole thing will fall apart. Okay, but the process of how the mind functions and to make it peaceful, that's valid. But just that they'll do it by mechanical means, while we'll do it by engaging it in the Lord's service. Okay, so,
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Maharaj, it means that we can take the system of yoga, but not the philosophy.
Yeah, but the point is, this means the system of yoga is already the system of bhakti. Yoga means yoga. But it's just bhakti yoga means you don't rely on the mechanics as on the devotion. Well, the astanga means you're applying, going through the eight mechanical levels, like that. So in this age, no one can do that. You know, but the technicalities of this, because here's the mind is going to go through these five stages. Now they have a mechanical system to get it through there. We have our own system to get it through there. That's the difference.
Thank you.